It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's St. Patrick's Day, and if you were at the St. Patrick's Parade in Pittsburgh over the weekend, then you know how much people in this town enjoy celebrating this day. The Scots-Irish were the first Europeans to settle in southwestern Pennsylvania in large numbers, and Pittsburgh has a storied Irish history. As the Industrial Revolution rolled on, many came to Pittsburgh in search of a job and ended up working in the mills and the mines. Today, we're exploring the roots of the Steel City's Irish heritage with Jim Lamb, president of the Irish Institute of Pittsburgh. Jim Lamb, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
Jim, when did the Irish start making their way to Pittsburgh and why?
Well, the first Irish were here even prior to the War for Independence, and first Catholic parish was established here in 1809, St. Patrick's, and it's the church, the building is gone, the original St. Patrick's Church, but there's a building that was built in 1905 or 1910 that's now down in the Strip District, but the original St. Patrick's Church was established in 1809. But of course there were, as you said, the Scots-Irish were here in big numbers even prior to the War for Independence.
And what was happening in Ireland around this time?
Well, in those days, of course, the British Ireland was part of the whole of Ireland was part of Britain, and that it was that way up until really 1921-22 after the War of Independence, and then finally when Ireland became its own sovereign state several years after that. But Ireland, a lot of Irish left Ireland even that early just to find a better life because they weren't terribly happy with the conditions they were living in Ireland.
And as the Industrial Revolution happened, the mills were up and running, coal was being mined. How were the businesses in Pittsburgh appealing to the Irish? What kind of promise of a job was being put out there?
Well, surely it was just so many jobs that were available as a result of the Industrial Revolution, and so the steel companies that were obviously centered here in Pittsburgh. Of course, Thomas Mellon, who came from Omagh in Northern Ireland way back in the early 1800s, started a bank. Or his sons did, and that certainly created the opportunity for other businesses to operate. And as a result, a lot of people came. And certainly in Ireland in the mid 1800s, during what was called the famine or the Great Starvation, depending on who you ask, a lot of people came from Ireland into the United States, and many came to Pittsburgh.
And what kind of jobs did they find when they got here?
Mostly entry level, heavy labor jobs, working in the steel mills, working in the coal mines, on the railroads. I know my own grandfather was a blacksmith who worked for one of the steel companies in the 1890s or early 1900s. He came here as a teenager and worked in the mills.
And what were the conditions like?
Well, as you could well imagine, the Industrial Revolution, while it created a lot of jobs, a lot of the conditions were rough. There wasn't such a thing as OSHA, the Occupation and Safety Hazard Administration, that now exists with the federal government. But very, very hard conditions, very long hours, very very demanding physical work. It would have been a tough life. And if you've ever studied some of the work that went on in the coal mines, certainly there was a lot of difficult work, a lot of difficult conditions, a lot of legacy illness such as black lung, and certainly if you lived anywhere in Hazelwood, any time up until very recently, you were more likely to have respiratory illness than any other neighborhood in the entire United States. Hazelwood being the center of the steel industry. Where that exists now, that was known by all of the health officials of this country as the highest incidence of respiratory disease, and they attribute that to all of the steel and other heavy industry that that marked that area.
From a social standpoint, how are the Irish treated in Pittsburgh, just in terms of their social status? For example, we know that the Irish were not given a lot of respect in cities, other American cities like Boston, for example, where they were really looked down on. What about Pittsburgh?
Yeah, there was quite a lot of the same experience here for the Irish in Pittsburgh when they first got here. I think there was also a quick ascendancy for many Irish. Number one, because they had English language, and they rose in areas of politics and the civil service a lot quicker than other nationalities, because they could speak English, and they were able to take and go after jobs that maybe other immigrants that did not speak English weren't able for.
And what were the traditionally Irish neighborhoods in Pittsburgh?
Certainly, Oakland, South Oakland especially, was, from what I understand, would have been the biggest. But the north side had a significant Irish enclave, as well as did Lawrenceville. Garfield was very much an Irish neighborhood. And certain areas around the south side, I think, certainly Carrick, which is the name of a number of towns in Ireland. I would have to assume that Carrick was probably Irish when it was first named. And Castle Shannon, which is a southern suburb named for an area in Ireland, the Shannon River, and et cetera. So I think there were quite a few pockets. Certainly Carnegie had its own. The town of Carnegie had its own Irish population.
Who were some of the distinguished citizens of Pittsburgh back in the early days of Irish immigration?
Well, I'd have to go back and check my notes on that, but certainly Thomas Mellon would have been one of the well-known names and remains a big name because of the bank that he started. And you'll hear about a few of the guys that were involved in boxing back in the day, because we're going to be talking about boxing here a little bit later. But Red Mason and some of the other men that were part of the. Of the whole boxing tradition here, but certainly in areas of ascendancy, certainly David Lawrence would have been one of the big names of Irish politicians known nationally. Former mayor of Pittsburgh, and then became governor of Pennsylvania, and so he would have been a big name among those that climbed to the highest heights of politics, and certainly a lot of corporate. Giants that came, guys like Tom O'Brien, who was the head of PNC Bank prior to Jim Rohr. Lots of folks that just really rose to the upper echelons of the community here in Pittsburgh.
Jim Lamb is with us. He's president of the Irish Institute of Pittsburgh here on Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. And Jim's going to stay with us. And when we rejoin you after a break here, we're going to talk about tonight's Pittsburgh Donnybrook amateur boxing event. And joining us will be 1992 Olympic gold medalist Michael Carruth. That's coming up. It's Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pittsburgh is celebrating St. Patrick's Day in a number of ways. One of them is the inaugural Pittsburgh Donnybrook, as it's called, an amateur boxing event where Team Pittsburgh is competing with Team Ireland for the Ambassador's Cup trophy. The event is being held at Pittsburgh's Grand Hall at the Priory on the north side. Team Ireland is being coached by Dublin native and 1992 Olympic welterweight boxing gold medalist Michael Carruth, who joins us now in Studio A. Michael Carruth, happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul, and same to you.
And Jim Lamb, president of the Irish Institute of Pittsburgh, continues on with us. And before I get to you, Michael, Jim, how did the Pittsburgh Donnybrook come about?
Yeah, there were a couple of Irish-American guys, all friends of mine who I've known for a long time, who who wanted to do something in relation to sports development. They were all athletes in their own right, and they got together and wanted to start using their network and developing youth programs for disadvantaged kids here in the Pittsburgh area. And they started running basketball camps, and this was just in the past year. And at one point, last November or December, this past, just a few months ago, the guys started thinking about, you know, we could do something about boxing. We have a lot of guys. How can we connect? And they called me and asked me if I could help them identify. What they wanted to do was bring a team from Ireland to fight a team from Pittsburgh. And this was just that recently, in November, December. And they wanted to make this part of their group of programs. And so through a friend of mine that I work with in Ireland, I got connected to Michael's club. And so when I made the call and spoke with Michael, I told him what we wanted to do, and he was very gracious. And I found out afterwards that he said, you know, Jim, we got these calls all the time, and he was surprised, I guess, as much as I was, that this actually came off, because usually it doesn't happen that way. But anyway, that's how it started. And now
you've got Michael Carruth over here.
I know. And because Michael's here, I think certainly he has a lot to do with the fact that a lot of people are paying attention, and sponsors came out in a big way, that the trade unions came out in a big way, a lot of corporates came out, and this is being supported by a lot of people here in Pittsburgh.
Well, Michael Carruth, first of all, what is your impression of Pittsburgh? You were in the St. Patrick's Day parade. You got to ride in that on Saturday, and now we've got the big event tonight. You've been, I'm sure, celebrating to some extent. How do you like it here?
It's been fantastic, and to have the kids are from 14 years old up to 26 years old. One of the kids was his first time ever on an airplane, so, and he's come to America. So, you know, they're absolutely – what's happening over the last couple of days, this is memories forever. And for me as well, like, if I've travelled the world, but the hospitality that we've been given here in Pittsburgh has been nothing short of sensational.
And how did you get to be the coach of the Irish squad, of Team Ireland?
Well, it's not a Team Ireland. It's actually it's my boxing club, which is Drimna Boxing Club. We're a one-club boxing club, and we've got one other boxer from another club fighting for us. But how it happened, Jim said to you, like, I got a phone call in November/December of this fine man here to my right-hand side. And as I said, you know, I've heard that phone call 30 times in the last 30 years, and he said, we want to bring you over. And then it started snowballing from there, and it got bigger, and emails went out, and phone calls and things like that. And then all of a sudden, it really became reality then. And here we are now. Tonight we're gonna fight the Donnybrook, as we call it, here in the Priority this evening. And it's somewhat, I suppose, it's like microwave fixing, this is, because it's happened so fast. And it really has. And in fairness to the work that's been done through Michael Divin, Mike McSorley and Jim and myself, I suppose, and everybody that's helped out, because I came over here around 5 weeks ago to help with a little bit of PR and things like that. And again, the amount of people that I've met over the last 5 weeks has been unbelievable again.
How did boxing get to be such a big sport in Ireland?
Well, I suppose boxing is our – it's not our national sport, obviously, but, you know, Gaelic Games would be our national sport. But because boxing is the most successful sport in Irish Olympic history. We've won more medals in boxing than all other sports combined. Now, we've only got something like, I think, 28 medals ever won in the Olympic Games. 16 of them have come through boxing. So when it comes to boxing, I suppose it's the grassroots. It's like, as I said, my boxing club is Drimna Boxing Club. Our club will be 50 years old next year. And it's the people like my father, who was my coach, and Joe Bean, who was our coach. It's guys who have given hours and years and decades of their life to helping young kids stay off the streets, you know, join a boxing club and get rewarded. You know, I got rewarded with, obviously, the biggest prize. I got to win the Olympic Games.
Let's talk about that. You made the Irish Olympic team, and in 1992 in Barcelona, you fought a Cuban fighter named Juan Hernandez Sierra.
Yep.
Now, you are about 5'7".
On my tippy toes.
On your tippy toes. And I believe that your opponent, was he about 6'3"?
In around that, yes. So he's
So how did you – there's a little, you know, distinct height disadvantage for you there. How did you feel going into that fight?
The most nervous I've ever been in a fight. Listen, when I went to Barcelona, I knew I was good. I knew I was ready for it, Barcelona. I said to my dad, I'm going to win a medal. And now, I've told him since I was 7 years old, I'm going to win the gold medal. Okay, but I knew if I got a good draw, I could beat anybody. You know, and to be honest, I didn't really get a good draw because in my second fight, I got the world number two, which was Andrei Zotto from Germany. I got him in my second fight, but I took care of him quite handily. So, and just the way it went, like if I gone to Barcelona, if somebody had to give me a cash load of money to put a bet on who would win the Olympic Games, I probably would have put it on Juan Hernandez Sierra to win the welterweight title because to me, I thought he was the most complete Cuban of them all. And I'm not just saying that because I end up beating him in the final, but he would have been the one I said, you don't want to meet that guy. You know what I mean? So
there you were. You know, you're coming.
It was a David versus Goliath type of thing. And one thing that I was great at doing was I was great at taking pressure off myself. Sure, he should beat me. I shouldn't beat him. And like, he should have bet me. He should have, you know, but he didn't get the tactics right. I got them right. So,
What did you do?
I let him come to me. He thought I was going to go to him, small, little, aggressive guy. You know, he thought I was going to... I'm actually a better boxer than I was a fighter. But I could mix it all up. I could fight. I could punch. I was clever. And he thought I was going to go to him. But we got the tactics right. We brought him to me. Which people can say is a bit crazy, letting a 6'3" Cuban come at you for three rounds. You know what I mean? But by him coming to me, he came into my range. And then I got him. I was faster than him, you know. I was stronger than him, and I wanted it more than him. And the bottom line was, when the final bell did eventually ring, I knew I'd won. But more importantly, he knew he'd lost, you know. And no matter what the decision would have been, it would have been, don't get me wrong, I would have been devastated had they not put my hand up and put his up. But he knew he was a beaten man, and boxers know that, you know. So, you know, we played a better game of chess. We got the tactics right and we stuck to the tactics. You know, and I remember coming back after the second round and I was 4-3 up. And I said to my dad, who was my coach, I said, will I go with him? And he says, why will you go with him? We're winning. He says, it's working. The plan is working.
By saying go with him, that meant he wanted you to maybe start to hit him more?
No, I wanted to push the Cuban back. You know,
Push
him back. And he said, no, let him come on. Let him come to you. And that's what we've done for three rounds. We brought him on. And we were two southpaws as well, which meant we led with our right hands and our right foots would be forward as well. So the bottom line was my right hook was quicker than his one. And that's what the two of us were really using most of it, you know. So, but again, I fought the best fight in my life. You know, I had to. You know, I had to get everything right on the day. And to become an Olympic champion, you need luck. You need, and that's it. You need luck as well. And I was lucky. You know, I wasn't lucky to win the fight. I won the fight, but everything fell into place.
It was your day.
Absolutely, it wasn't going to be taken away from me.
Now, when you won, you became the first Irish Olympic gold medalist in 36 years. Yeah. So, what was it like back home for you?
Well, basically, you were on the St. Patrick's Day parade there the other day, weren't you? Yeah, okay. So times that by about 10, okay? So when I came back to Ireland, I think there was something like a million people lining the streets because as a small nation, we've been starved of Olympic success. You know, we're not an America, we're not a Russia, we're not, you know, a China. The amount of Olympic medals you win compared to little countries. So the bottom line was, we're Irish and we like to party as well, as you know. So any excuse to party was. But again, we were starved of Olympic success, I should say, for 36 years. Ronnie Delaney won back in 1956. He won the 1500 metres. And to be honest, in 1956, there wasn't television and things like that in Ireland. So a lot of people didn't get to see Ronnie's success like they got to see mine live on a Saturday morning on the 8th of August, 1992. People will say they know where they were when John F. Kennedy was shot. The thing in Ireland was, I know where I was when Michael Crute won the gold medal. And I suppose being the first, that can't be taken away from me. I'm always going to be the first.
We're talking with Olympic gold medalist Michael Carruth, the boxer who is coaching Team Ireland in the Pittsburgh Donnybrook, which is taking place tonight. There were a lot of expectations placed on you. You turned pro, but you never won that world title. Is that a major disappointment for you as a boxer, or does that gold medal just make that a moot point?
No, not really. I'll tell you, turning professional was a thing that I wasn't always going to. I was never always wanted to turn pro in that regard. But I was 25 years old. People had told me that at 25 years old, I was expected to give up boxing because it won the Olympic Games. Like, I was never going to stop boxing going to the Barcelona Games. Then everybody was saying to me, you can only lose. You know, you're not going to stay unbeaten as an amateur because it's next to impossible, you know. So it kind of was going to taint the gold medal. And I said, I wasn't ready to give up boxing. And then I said to myself, like, going professional, you know, it's a way of actually, like, the highest bidder was going to get me, and that was the bottom line with it as well. Like the Bob Arums, the Don Kings, the Frank Warrens, all of these guys came in for me to sign with them.
You know, they wanted to pay you.
So yeah, they wanted to pay me. Like, and we got a decent contract. And I was talking to Jim earlier on about my professional career and things like that. And I said my biggest regret was probably not coming to America. You know, I probably should have based myself in America, and you know, for professional boxing, there's no better place than America. But I based myself in London. I was co-promoted through Frank Warren and Don King. But I suppose the bottom line was, I didn't have the career, the professional career that I wanted, I suppose. But to be honest, nothing outdoes an Olympic gold medal, not a world title. Like, we had George Foreman in our boxing club a few years ago, and one of the kids asked him, what meant more to you, winning the Olympic Games or becoming the champion of the world, heavyweight champion of the world? He said, I dreamt of becoming an Olympic champion. I never dreamt of becoming the champion of the world. Mm. And I'm the same. I dreamt of becoming an Olympic champion.
And he has that gold medal with him in Pittsburgh, by the way. Michael Carruth will be – you'll have that on display tonight,
I will,
right?
Do it. Jim will be looking after.
Yeah, Jim, we have just a few seconds or so remaining, but this event tonight, it's the inaugural event. Will it continue to happen?
Yes, it's our intention to run this every year on St. Patrick's Day. On the 17th, we intend to run this every year, and it's going to be something that – is what I my vision or my goal is to make this the biggest event next to the parade in the middle of March every year here in Pittsburgh.
So, and the trophy, the Ambassador Trophy, will be a traveling
trophy.
It'll
be a traveling trophy. We'll see how it travels. We'll see what happens tonight, whether it stays here in Pittsburgh or if it goes back to Dublin. I think Michael has his own ideas on that.
Quick prediction, Michael, who's going to win?
And us.
Us. Okay, fair enough. Michael Carruth, Olympic gold medalist, who is the coach of the team from Ireland, taking on a Pittsburgh team in the Pittsburgh Donnybrook tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael.
Thanks for having us, Walt.
Jim Lamb, a pleasure having you as well.
Thanks, Mike.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, gubernatorial candidate Allison Schwartz. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.